How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
We have a fun episode of TFL Talking Trucks podcast for you right now because the old team is back.
Hi guys, how you doing?
Nathan, what up, brother?
What up? How you doing?
So, dude, so you are opening up a bureau in California. And so, I mean, you've been moving, you were going to events, but right now we're back. We're doing kind of this teleconference together for this podcast.
Yeah, we're going to see if this is a good format. If this is something you guys like, maybe we'll do it again.
Yes, for sure. And we'll continue to talk about cool topics. Like this time, it's all about mini trucks and specifically compact pickup trucks, production trucks. And you're in the SoCal area, which is a haven for mini trucks, right?
Yeah, you know, it's really funny. The minute I got here, and I've been here for about a month, I have seen more customized mini trucks than you could shake a stick at. And we're talking, for the most part, lowered ones and whatnot. But there's also been some brand new Tacomas. There's been some Nissan Frontiers that are very tastefully lifted and set up for serious off-roading. And I look at them and think, we're in Southern California. It's going to take you a while to get to a place where you can off-road. But that's the whole thing about being here.
Well, sometimes it's not all about off-roading, is it?
I know. Yeah, you're right.
So, and this is where this episode of the podcast really is going, because Ford has just introduced a lowered compact pickup, the new Maverick Lobo, from the factory, right? So they've done the Raptors, they've done the Tremors, they've done everything else under the sun. It seems, but for their smallest pickup, their 2025 Ford Maverick, they've introduced a refresh, pretty thorough refresh. They've done some changes under the hood, and also introduced this new model, the Lobo. So on this episode, I really wanted to see, talk with you about, how does it compare against competition, like the Hyundai Santa Cruz, because that's also refreshed, right?
Right, like really refreshed.
Yeah, and also, how does it fit into the culture? And, is this going to be successful?
All right, well, right off the bat, what's the first thing that people have been asking for with the Ford Maverick? I mean, what's been like the overriding demand that people have been making?
Well, people loved the hybrid Maverick, right?
Yeah.
You and I have spoken about this numerous occasions. When you were purchasing your last little pickup 2 years ago, you really seriously looked at the Maverick, right?
I seriously did. And the only reason I didn't get it is because there was no all-wheel drive option for the hybrid.
Yes. And now there is. So really, Ford listened. So this is pretty cool that, a big company like Ford, they're very successful with the current Maverick. Really, they had to do nothing about it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's selling they sold 77,000 of them in the first 6 months of this year, which was more than Toyota sold Tacomas in the same period.
Yeah.
Because the Tacoma is going through this generational change right now, and they're not selling as many. So Ford almost had to do nothing, but they did quite a bit. They refreshed the face, which is controversial, because a lot of people are disliking the new face. So I wanted to ask.
I'm one of them.
You're one of them.
Yeah, I like the other face better. I like the original face. The cut headlight. I get it. It's supposed to look more like an F-150. I don't know. I just find it to be. It makes the front end look a little squinty and a little weak to me. That's, other than that, I think the rest of the truck is still a little attractive little thing. But yeah, those headlights, I'm just not really hip to.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your vehicle. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your vehicle, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your vehicle hassle-free and fast, go to tfltruck.com and click Sell Your Truck in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
Yeah, and I mean, it does look, yeah, the new grille and the way that the bumper kind of goes into the headlamp, I'm not a huge fan of. But, you know, certain angles like this eruption green Maverick Lariat that I have an image here. If you guys are watching us on YouTube TFL Talk channel, you'll be able to see it. Or you can go to oldtfl.com and check out our stories. Certain angles of this truck in certain colors actually look very attractive. But, you know, you may have to see it in person and kind of live with it for a little while before you kind of get used to it.
Yeah, agreed. And by the way, that eruption green looks fantastic. But here's the deal about that. It's only available for 1 year. What the hell?
Well, you know, companies, you know, manufacturers, they like to kind of like try to get, you know, put some pressure on the consumer, you know, get it now or, you know, don't get it at all kind of thing. So they like doing that.
Yeah, I know. I just, it drives me crazy because it's like, finally, there's a really cool color. And oh, sorry. It's probably be gone by the time you order a truck or whatever. But so if you guys are really hip to that color, you're going to have to order it like now.
Yeah. And so of course, so the styling is in the eye of the beholder, right? So you can let us know if you like it or not like it. And then finally, like we said, they added all-wheel drive to the hybrid. That was a big deal.
It's huge because it's more than just snapping your fingers and making it happen. They had to engineer the system. And by the way, unlike the predictions that they were going to go the Toyota route and have an electric motor to an axle feeding the rear wheels, they didn't do that. They beefed up their CVT, and then they ran a drive shaft, like a proper truck, to the rear wheels. I'm going to assume that it's a similar setup in terms of the drive shaft and the rear end to the other turbocharged version of the Maverick, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. They had possibly several different choices they could have gone, you know. They could have done an electric motor in the rear. They could have removed the drive shaft altogether. Right. But I think it was a matter of, it's a mid-cycle refresh, right? So there's only so many things you could do or you could change, and you have a limited budget, right? So we could argue here, we could sit here and argue, you know, which one is better for weight distribution or capability. But the fact is they didn't do it. You know, they didn't have an electric motor in the back. But it's still a pretty useful pickup. So they maintain the payload capacity, which is pretty great, actually. About 1,500 pounds for a front-wheel drive Maverick.
Yeah, for the front-wheel drive, yeah.
Yeah, for all-wheel drive, of course, it's going to go lower because, you know, you're adding some other components to it. They did, for the hybrid, beef up. Because I asked the engineer, right, the head engineer, I said, how did you add the all-wheel drive system? Was it simple to the hybrid? And they said, he basically said, we had to beef up the entire CVT. And of course, you and I are not huge fans of CVTs in general. But, you know, we'll still have to wait and see and drive it and see how it performs.
I'm really curious about that. When I drove the hybrid, and I've driven several versions of the hybrid, you know, various levels and everything else. I even went to a dealership and drove the base model. I wanted to see the cheapest one. Back then was like $22,000, and it's no longer that price. And honestly, the CVT didn't bother me as much as it has on other vehicles. It didn't really whine and slap as much as I thought it would. And the vehicle itself, it hauled. It moved really well. We used one and we drove up the hill towing a trailer. Remember that, Andre? We did a little mini Ike with that.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, and it did really well for a vehicle that frankly just didn't have a whole lot of power. But in the mountains, having that little electric motor backing you up is very reassuring, and it works quite well.
And talking about towing, they beefed up the towing alongside.
I know, like crazy. They basically doubled it.
Yeah, so the maximum towing on the Maverick used to be 4,000 pounds. So right. They kept that 4,000-pound limit across all of them now. But before, the hybrid could only tow 2,000. So like you said, they doubled it from 2,000 to 4,000 because I think a lot of customers said, all right, I love the fuel efficiency of the hybrid, but I feel penalized because I can't tow as much, right? And Ford, by the sheer fact that they also beefed up the CVT, right? So they were able to add additional cooling to the front of it for the engine and transmission and all the systems, and actually operate the towing capability too. So now no matter which Maverick you buy, you can kind of select that towing package, and you can know that you can tow up to 4,000 pounds.
If you think about the competition that's out there, 4,000 pounds is quite good, especially now that it goes across the board. There's exceptions. I think both the Tremor and the Lobo can only tow 2,000 pounds. Am I correct?
You're right. Yes. Let's get to the Lobo in a second. You mentioned competition, and Hyundai Santa Cruz just refreshed their Santa Cruz as well for 2025.
And right, but they didn't go anywhere near as a comprehensive refresh as Ford has. I mean, not even close. They essentially changed the nose, added tow hooks, changed the interior a little bit. So it's mostly cosmetic, if I'm right. But correct me if I'm wrong, because you've been near it. I haven't.
Yeah. And let's focus on competition a little bit later, because I also, as part of this podcast, we do live questions from our Patreon supporters. So on patreon.com/TFLcar, that's our only Patreon account. If you're one of our supporters, we can set up an actual a Zoom call, a conference call, where we can talk to you directly, face-to-face, basically over the Zoom, and have questions. So we have one of those that has to do with road trips. And Nathan, you've done some road trips, especially recently. You moved out to California. So I want to bring a question from Chris and also use this in this podcast. So patreon.com/TFLcar. You could always go there. You could see some behind-the-scenes videos over there, and also previews of our upcoming videos, and also set up a call with us for questions and comments. Yep.
Okay.
So, Lobo, you mentioned Lobo. Dude, let's check it out. Because, you know, is really a street performance mini truck, is it really actually back? That's the question.
Well, for one thing, in Spanish, Lobo means wolf. And I believe that was intentional from Ford marketing. And perhaps it has something to do with being a lone wolf, or maybe with a wolf pack. I'm not 100% sure on that one.
I think it has to do with a wolf pack, because I don't think Ford wants you to be a lone wolf necessarily from their marketing standpoint, but I'm also not a marketer. So the question I had for them is, and was, why not ST, right? They have a Ford Performance team. They have a line of ST performance vehicles. And this performance vehicle lineup is not just North America, right? They have some European ST products, hot hatches. They have some different vehicles. They have Explorer ST here in the United States. They also, until recently, also had an Edge ST. So they had different performance crossovers, SUVs. They had an opportunity to make the Maverick an ST, but they didn't.
Yeah. So let's talk about what they did do with the Lobo first, which is it's got a different set of suspension, like the springs and everything else are different. It's a little bit lower. It's as low as they can make it within certain parameters, if I recall. And tire and wheel package. But I don't think they've upped the horsepower. Am I correct?
No, this is quite interesting. And maybe that's part of the equation here, right? Because
yeah, maybe that's why it's not an ST.
Yeah, because an ST also in my mind means some sort of higher output powertrain. So they kept their 2-liter EcoBoost turbocharged four-cylinder across all new Mavericks for 2025.
They produce less power now, right? Just a little bit less than before.
Yeah, that's also got a little bit strange. It used to be that 250, and now they're rating it at 237 horsepower. Still a lot of torque, 277 pound-feet of torque from this.
That's pretty good, yeah. I'm wondering if the lowering of horsepower has to do with EPA numbers. But anyway, going back to the Lobo, so not only does it not produce more power, it's technically producing less, like all the other ones. So it's really about suspension. Am I correct?
Yeah. So actually, I have a video that's also you can see at oldtfl.com that I actually interviewed one of the members of the engineering team behind the Lobo. And actually, you know, when you dig down, they did quite a lot to it. So it's not just a cosmetic package, because you could say, oh, they lowered it an inch and gave it a new bumper and grille. No, there's quite a bit more going on. Like you said, special springs and shocks, because they did lower it, but they wanted it to be a little bit more precise, a little bit more firm. That comes with lowered payload. So don't expect it to have 1,500 pounds of payload. It's only rated at about 1,000 pounds of payload, and also 2,000 pounds of towing, like you said. So it's a little bit more focused on the street performance. They changed the brakes, steering column. The tires are new. We can talk about tires in a little, for a little while. And of course, the styling is quite unique on this one.
Yeah. Do you think that they were inspired by that SEMA? I mean, it wasn't just lowered, it was slammed. Yes. Maverick from like 4 years ago or 3 years ago, because that thing was a massive hit. Everybody loved it.
Well, you and I were at SEMA that year, right?
Yeah.
We saw it. I think it was called the Tuccio concept. And they talked about it, dude. The designer of the new Maverick talked about that SEMA concept. I think they really connected with that and really drew inspiration from that. But of course, that was a concept. Like you said, it was slammed almost on the ground. It had ginormous wheels, right? A humongous wing, protruding in the back. This is a production version, right? So of course they couldn't do some of those things, but I think they still did quite a bit. It does have the turbine wheel, which is this kind of built-in alloy wheel. So I'm thinking, because it's only available in this dark color, but I'm thinking people are going to start painting them. And really, it lends itself to customization.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Yeah, and I've been told that the Maverick is an easy vehicle to wrap with the flat panels and everything else, that it's relatively easy for people to actually wrap it. So I'd imagine you're going to see lots of unique colors and designs and all that as well.
And I'm sure, some owners are going to slam them. I mean, it's going to happen. I don't know if you've seen any rolling around SoCal, but
I have.
yeah.
But they haven't been slammed as much as the one at SEMA. I don't think they physically can do much past a certain point. I think that there's physical limitations to being able to do that. And the vehicle at SEMA, we don't know whether or not that thing could actually drive, or even steer, right? So I think in order for the guys, especially down here in SoCal, to slam these things, they have major limitations on like I don't know, a Honda or whatever, where they won't have to worry about turning and rubbing about, everything they're doing, or perhaps not being able to use the brakes. There's so many reasons why they can't necessarily slam these things. But I'm glad that Ford did that because they're now catering to a new audience, and that's huge.
Yeah, and there is no hybrid Lobo. So if you're wondering, by the way, Ford said all-wheel drive hybrid Maverick, XL, XLT, and Lariat could get up to 40 mpg in the city. That's a huge number. And I
So
think,
it's 42 without the all-wheel drive, right?
yeah. So you're losing 2 mpg, but still 40, dude, that's pretty incredible.
I can't think of any other vehicle that comes even close to that that has four-wheel drive or all-wheel drive. I can't.
Yeah, and well, I guess you could think about, some of the Toyota hybrid products, but not in a pickup space, at least, not in this utility space.
Yeah, Toyota. Now, if Toyota does build a pickup to compete, they have the tools to make it competitive in terms of MPG, but it doesn't exist right now, not here in America.
Yeah, and not many other places either. I mean,
Right.
Toyota has the Hilux around the world, they have Tacomas, and yeah, so I think we can talk about competition and what is competition doing, which apparently not much right now, which is quite strange.
I'm stunned with Hyundai, and I'm actually frankly disappointed. Hyundai has the means, they have the equipment to take the Santa Cruz and not only make it a hybrid and make it more efficient and up all the numbers so it can fight the Ford head on. They have the capacity to do even more with it, and they haven't. What they've done is a refresh of the front end. And they made it a little prettier to some people or uglier to others, and they added tow hooks in the front. They as far as I'm concerned, they sort of dropped the ball, being competitive at least with Ford. Now I know Hyundai would say something like, well, we're going our own direction, we're doing our own thing. Well, guess what? A lot of consumers want hybrid technology because gas is expensive. Trust me, I'm in California. And if you don't have an option like that, you're going to miss out on an awful lot of potential customers who don't like the fact that those Hyundais do at best like 27 miles per gallon. And by the way, I had the naturally aspirated one, and I rarely saw better than 25 miles per gallon combined.
Yeah, like you said, fuel. I mean, here in Boulder, Denver area, we're at about $3.50 a gallon. Where are you at? Like $5 a gallon more?
I'm actually lucky. There's one place, an ARCO gas station down the street, that is at 403. That's the cheapest, and that's what I've been using to fill up my beast. But I would say average is probably about 450 to 475.
Yeah. So you want to eke out as much efficiency as you can, really, out of
Right.
both of your vehicles. So yeah, so I think, but I mean, Ford, like we said, I mean, they could have done more. So one other thing they changed is they added a big screen to all Mavericks, right?
Yeah, I saw it's huge too. It's like
Yeah.
what, 13 inches or something?
Yeah, 13.2 inch, which is the same screen they're using right now in the new Explorer for 2025.
Right.
It's very crisp, dude. Its resolution is really great. I was in some of those Mavericks. I used the screen. You know how you and I complained that the previous screen was a little bit too much forward? It was too vertical,
It
right?
was too vertical, and it was too small.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Well, it's almost as vertical as before. So they didn't really lean it much. But because it's larger, it somehow made it feel, better in my eye, because you and I complained that you're kind of looking down at the screen, right?
Yeah, and it was hard to see anything, really. That was the problem.
So I think they improved it, at least the ones I saw. I only had limited time for now, so we'll have to wait and see. But they didn't do one thing that I really wanted, which was like a higher power inverter power export, right? So everybody talks about, going camping, going outdoors, and the Maverick Hybrid still only has 400 watts of power. So
So let's put that into perspective. What can 400 watts power right now?
okay, so what I would use it for, like if you have a plug inside your cab, you could charge laptop while you're or using a laptop or watch a movie while you're moving. You could charge tool batteries. So if you have, power tools, you could charge those batteries. You can't really run many compressors, or I mean some compressors, not all of them. You can't really run big tools that you have to plug in. So you really kind of limit it. I mean, you can do extra lights for sure, many extra lights. Or even a satellite. We recently acquired a Starlink mobile antenna.
Oh, okay.
And that antenna only uses about 60 to 70 watts. So actually, you could add that antenna to the Maverick and still be fine for your, satellite internet if you needed it.
That's pretty cool, actually.
But a lot, you're limited in some ways. For example, if it was 2000 watts, now you can run a big compressor. You can, fill up, air down and air up tires. You can air up a lot of your equipment.
You could use a blender or a microwave.
Yes.
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 Which is great for camping. I highly recommend bringing microwaves to camping.
Well,
But you,
it's more like glamping.
well, yeah, it is. But there's a lot of people out there who they want to be able to go and power a campsite. And really, the only vehicle that can do it that's not a full electric vehicle would be the big F-150 hybrid. And that's about it.
Yeah, and some other manufacturers like Toyota is introducing their 2000 watt inverters in Tacoma hybrids, right?
Yeah.
There's some other vehicles that are coming online soon. Ram 1500s will have 2000 watt inverters. Toyota has some 2000 watt inverters, like in their Sienna minivan, for example.
Yeah.
So there's some manufacturers that are going that way. But I think Ford with their F-150 hybrid, they offer 7.2 kilowatt or 7200 watt 240 volt system, which you can weld off of. You could power homes with it. You could charge cars with it. So I think Ford F-150 hybrid is really at the forefront there.
Agreed 100%. I don't know if the Maverick has the battery capacity to really be much in terms of, remember, they in order to make that inverter work, it really depends on a few things, of course, but battery size probably plays into that. And it's got, the Maverick's got a tiny little battery. I don't know if Ford can actually design a way to, around that in order to make it produce more power. That might be their problem. Now, look, I'm no engineer, as you very well know, but that seems like it might be one of the limiting factors.
Probably, and they kept the same battery in this Maverick hybrid as before. It's
Yeah.
1.1, it's 1.1 kilowatt hours. So the F-150 hybrid has a 1.5, I think, or something like that. So a bit bigger. The Tundra hybrid and Tacoma hybrid have about 1.87 kilowatt hours in those batteries. So the Maverick definitely has a slightly smaller battery. It's also underneath the chassis, right? So there's limited space.
Yes.
They're putting it underneath the passenger side, where the seats are. It's kind of mounted underneath and it's protected by a skid plate. But there's limited space.
Now, I recall that the previous Maverick, one of the issues that some people were having was transmission issues. And it wasn't just with the CVT, it was actually with the 8-speed automatic transmission. Have they beefed that up too?
No, I didn't hear any changes on the 8-speed, except the Lobo. They took the 8-speed and they threw one of the gears away, and it made it a 7-speed. And I kind of went one of those. So I did one of those. So we still have to drive that and figure that out. How does the Maverick Lobo 7-speed actually work? But they said that those some of the gear ratios were too close together. They felt like in the 8-speed, and it's done for efficiency, right? And they didn't w they wanted a little bit more crisper and more performance-oriented transmission. So for the Lobo specifically, so they threw one of the gears away, and still used that seven. No, now using 7-speed. So that was quite interesting.
That is very interesting. That's I didn't know about that. I'm curious to which particular gear they threw away. But most importantly, by doing that, I guess technically you made it a little bit lighter weight if you think about it, by, I don't know, 100 ounces. But also you're making it perhaps spin at a rate that is going to be better for power connection, you know. I think the idea of being more crisp and being able to put that power to the ground faster, maybe that was why they did it.
Yeah, and also they changed the steering ratio is a little quicker. They're using the dual clutch rear differential from the Tremor Maverick and also the Bronco Sport Badlands, right? So that differential exists now in the Lobo, but they're using that differential for a couple things, to be able to kind of overdrive the outside wheel while turning. So
Oh
that's a
yeah, well
little bit.
it's torque vectoring, but it's not off-road torque vectoring. This is basically what you're using on the street, and that should, I mean, torque vectoring really does work. I've used it, as you have, on higher end performance vehicles, and when done correctly, it can make that thing perform beautifully.
Yeah, and also some of their tuning and their drive modes, some of those are allowing for the vehicle to drift. We don't have any video of it drifting, and I haven't drifted it yet or tried to, but they said you can actually get it sideways. Can you imagine a little pickup going sideways, with smoke billowing? That would be something.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. Recently, I've seen some new products from some other automakers. I can't go into it in detail, but what it's an all-wheel drive vehicle where you can take it and go either 50-50 split, or when you're on performance surfaces track, you can go 30 and 70% to the rear, and that allows you to drift. Now, I'm wondering if Ford has done something similar where you're able to select that. And that way you're putting a lot of power to the rear end. And if that's the case, that could be a fascinating pickup truck in more ways than one. So I'm very curious to see how they did that.
And also transferring power sideways, right? Because that's what we're talking about too. So if you're kind of if you're trying to go sideways and if your steering angles is just right, the truck kind of senses your intention. That's what Ford told me. I mean, they have a lot of sensors on the vehicle now. I mean, we've seen it in the Raptor trucks where they're measuring, they're watching throttle position, steering angle, speed, wheel speed. That they're getting all these parameters from the vehicle, and they're able to see what the driver's intention may be. Does the driver want to go precisely around the corner, or is the driver trying to have some fun? So that's going to be interesting to see how that's done.
Yeah, I would agree. See, you and I are probably, because we're being a little bit harsh on Ford, saying, well, they could have done more. But if you think about it, this refresh is way beyond a refresh. I mean, they essentially have built an all new truck or two, and they're doing all of these things that nobody else is doing, which is just distancing themselves from the competition that much further. And I'm not trying to be a Ford fanboy, but I wish other automakers would jump into the fray with their own versions of what the Maverick is, because they sold, what, 70,000 of them in the first half of 2024. 70,000 of them. This truck is making Ford a lot of money. And I think that a truck similar to that, Now, I believe, by the way, Hyundai's is less than half of that right now, give or take. You know, a lot of people are like, well, you know, that's because it's an inferior vehicle. And to a lesser degree, you'd be right in terms of there's just not as much choice. And they've also priced themselves a little bit too high. But Hyundai, once again, I'm coming back to this, they would do themselves a big favor by building a hybrid version of the vehicle. More importantly, a plug-in hybrid. That would be interesting. And bringing in a whole new audience, which they're just, I know they can do it, and they're not, and I don't get it. So anyway, enough about that. I'm going to drop that. So, I'm not trying to pick on Hyundai, but I am really impressed with what Ford has done. I did not expect this many changes with the Maverick.
Yeah, and I think it probably also has to do with factory capacities, right? I mean,
right.
Ford was able to increase some of their capacity at the factory in Mexico where the Maverick is built. But right. You know, it's not an easy thing to do.
There are still people waiting for their Mavericks, and there's many of Maverick's current ones that are sold out.
Yeah, exactly. And also, there's a but. Ford did increase the price of the Maverick by around $2,400 to start. So it now starts with destination over $27,000. So, yeah. You know, it initially started about 20,000, then they increased the price over the years since 2022. Now it's even a little higher, but okay, so it's a bummer. It's $2,400 more now than before, but still 27 grand is under 30K. So you can still buy a lot of vehicle for not a huge amount of money.
I agree. And add to that the fact that you're getting more standard equipment. That big screen, that 13.2-inch screen, I think you said?
Yeah.
That's standard. New hybrid system, the new transmission.
Yeah.
All of that is standard in those vehicles. So there is something to be said about having a vehicle that has all of that new standard equipment. Ford is definitely going to bump the price up. I'm bummed because the idea of having something that was nearly a sub $20,000 vehicle that had a hybrid powertrain was extremely attractive. However, if you look at the base model Ford Maverick hybrid that's coming out, it's still going to be one of the least expensive hybrid vehicles you can buy if you compare it to even something like a Toyota Prius. And that to me is like mind-blowing. So they're still in it in terms of pricing, but I feel bad because I really wish that they would have kept some sort of entry-level version that was, $4,000 or $5,000 less.
Yeah, I mean, let's see where this goes, but if more competitors come in, maybe it could force Ford to do something like that, right?
Yeah.
So how about this? How about let's switch gears. I want to play this question from Chris. So Chris had a question for us, and it actually had to do with a road trip that you did, Nathan. So let's play Chris's question and Case and I discussion with Chris, and then we can come back and finish this episode.
That sounds great.
And now we have Chris joining the show. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great. Hope you all are doing good.
Oh, yeah, we are. And so you have a question. What is your question?
Yeah, my question is around the Yukon XL and the Denali, and specifically also including the Jeep Wagoneer, as we're calling it, instead of the Wagoneer now. And I have a 2021 Yukon XL Denali with the 6.2 liter engine, and I have about almost 80,000 miles on it. And I'm interested in a replacement. I immediately defaulted to just getting another Yukon XL because we love it. But with the new Wagoneer and the new Hurricane engine, I was really interested in the gas savings around it because the advertised highway MPG and the Denali is about 18 or 19, I think. And we consistently get that on the highway. We do a lot of road trips. We've done, you know, thousands of miles of road trips in a few weeks, and then also shorter ones. So we did a road trip recently from North Texas to Arkansas that we do quite a bit every year. So I rented a Wagoneer just to get the experience. It was a 2024 Wagoneer Series 2 with the standard output Hurricane.
Okay.
And I thought for sure I would see great miles per gallon on this trip, but I did not. It was about 330 miles. And I was so shocked by this number, I had to take a screenshot, take a photo. I got 18.1 miles per gallon, all highway miles. And the advertised, I had to pull it up, is 23 from the government. So I want to see if y'all have had any feedback about this. And since it's such a new engine, maybe there's not much feedback yet.
Yeah.
But this... Yeah. has made me kind of change my mind and maybe even want to get your all's feedback on what the 2025 Yukon changes are, including the new diesel, which I'm hearing about.
Yeah, those are great questions. Thank you. So you primarily, do you tow trailers once in a while, or do you primarily just use it kind of as a road trip?
It's just the family truckster.
Yeah. Well, it's a great vehicle. I mean,
yeah,
Yukon XL, especially Denali. I mean, it's basically a Suburban, right?
Yeah.
So it's a very large, big SUV.
Yeah, and they're great all-arounders. Obviously, a lot of space. You can put a lot of people in them, a lot of stuff. If you do need to pull a trailer, you can do that. If you need to go down a light trail, you can do that as well. Fuel economy is definitely going to be, obviously, as you know, one of the big drawbacks. And would you say that that's one of the main things that has you maybe looking to move away from your current Yukon? This fuel economy?
Yeah, that was mainly it, because I wanted to get a little bit more miles per gallon on the highway trips. The city, right. I understand it's going to be bad. But if I could get in the 20s with a large SUV that I thought the Wagoneer would do, I would switch to that. But now it has me reconsidering.
Yeah.
So we haven't done a lot of testing on the Wagoneer with the new engine. So as you stated, the new engine is a 3-liter twin turbo straight six
Hurricane
engine, and they have two versions, like you said, you know, the standard and the high output. So Case and I, we've done some testing of that engine in a pickup truck, the new Ram 1500.
Yeah, it's true. So we did the old 5.7 gas motor versus the new Hurricane, and we did a long MPG loop. It was a little over 100 miles, and our experience was similar to yours, that really going from the old V8 into the Hurricane, fuel economy savings really weren't
much. They weren't there, yeah.
Yeah.
And partially it's because when, especially if you're going at higher speeds, if there's wind or any, you know, kind of load on the vehicle, you're asking, you know, for power. And the turbochargers are happy to oblige, right? They have a lot of power, a lot of torque, as you probably felt. But with that comes fuel usage, right?
Yeah.
So especially if you're on a highway like in Texas, right? 80 mile an hour speed limit or 85, I don't know. I mean, higher speeds. And so in that environment, so that engine is probably not as efficient as other engines.
No, it is. It's a very smooth, powerful engine, as I'm sure you noticed. They're nice vehicles to drive. The Hurricane is pretty pleasant. But yeah, certainly there is some upcoming news around the Yukon that maybe Andre can talk about a bit.
Yeah, so a little bit. So as you said, GMC is redesigning their Yukon. And actually, across the board, GM, there's a new Tahoe, there's a new Suburban. They're basically refreshes. So they're not like a big new generation of the vehicle. And Yukon was teased. So we have an image. Sorry, I don't know if I can pull it up right now, but we have just an image of the headlamps, right? And also some images of a prototype, of the prototype that was running around. And so we don't know a lot about this yet, Chris, the upcoming Yukon. But I do know this. I think this was a couple of years ago, and our buddy Nathan, our colleague Nathan, took a GMC Yukon with a diesel. And I think he had to drive to Iowa.
I was with him.
You were with him?
Yeah.
Can you talk about this experience a little bit?
Yeah, I forget what the exact numbers were, but we were getting great fuel economy. I want to say on a single tank, we did maybe almost 500 miles. We went quite a long ways on a single tank. So that 3-liter Duramax awesome engine, good power output. Not some of the drawbacks that you used to get with more old school diesels, like the diesel that I drive, not super clattery. I mean, you might have had a chance at some point to test out the 3 liter Duramax, but do you think that that would be something powertrain wise that would potentially interest you?
Yeah, it would. And I guess my big question is that I keep hearing that the diesel is different next year in the Yukon, and even different, I guess, across the Suburbans and Tahoes and such. So I didn't know what the difference is.
Yeah, it's always it's tough to get confirmation, because until things are officially revealed, manufacturers won't talk about it at all. And they try to keep things right under wraps as much as possible. But if anyone has heard rumors, it would be this guy right here.
Yeah. So the 3 liter came out, what, several years ago, right? The 3 liter Duramax. And it was in the Silverado 1500, Sierra 1500, and then they put it into the SUVs.
Yeah.
So it exists there now. And then last year for the trucks, they came out with a new version of it, which was slightly revised. I believe the code is LZ0. GM has this weird three character designations for a lot of their trim packages or options or engines.
And
I think I found that trip. It was a 2021 Yukon Denali diesel.
Oh, yeah. So same year.
Nice. There we go.
Except it's a diesel. And Case and Nathan,
how far did we go?
26 gallon tank, 572 miles.
Yeah.
You guys went.
That's awesome.
So so the new LZ0, and I have to think about this for a second. I thought it was already in the Yukon and the Suburban, but maybe it wasn't. So but it's only good news. They basically kind of extended the service life of the engine. Because as with any new engine, right, there's some improvements that the manufacturer can make, and they improved the power a little bit. So they bumped the power on the new version of the 3 liter. So I think it's now like 305 horsepower. And I believe that version of that engine will be available in the SUVs.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Let's see.
Yeah, and either way, you're not likely to see any really dramatic updates. It's already a pretty good motor as far as fuel economy, power, noise. I mean, we haven't seen any big issues with them that I can think of. So really,
and it's not a new motor to GM. So they've already been using it, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
the Hurricane is a new engine.
Yeah, Hurricane is.
Yeah.
So GM has a little bit more experience with their 3 liter Duramax rather than, you know, Stellantis or Jeep is with their 3 liter Hurricane engine. So based on all this stuff, I would lean a little bit more towards the Duramax, actually, the diesel, because specifically for your use case, diesel is really great at going long distance because the RPM is kind of low. You know, diesels make a lot of torque down low in the rev range. So you don't have to like ask for a lot of power. It kind of just rolls down the highway.
Yeah, and we have it.
You found out.
And we have it jotted down here in the article that the number that we actually averaged on that road trip that we did was about 25 miles per gallon, which again, in an SUV like that, it's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really good. Yeah. That's a great number. Yeah. It surprises me that, you know, I know the government numbers a lot of vehicles don't get close to, but the Wagoneer didn't get anywhere close to what was advertised. And if you're getting that kind of mileage out of the diesel with just a standard Yukon in your story there, and then the Yukon XL has a bigger fuel tank on the diesel, so that's all good news.
Yeah,
I think so. I think for your use case, I mean, if you told me that, you know, you tow trailers regularly, if you're commuting in it, you know, short distances, but it sounds like you're using the diesel engine. I mean, you're using your Yukon as if, you know, they like miles, right?
Oh, yeah.
So short trips are probably bad for this engine like this because it doesn't have a chance to warm up, you know, doesn't have a chance to kind of actually get up to, you know, its efficiency.
That's true. If 9 out of 10 of your drives that you make with the vehicle are going to be, you know, 4 or 5 minutes down the road to the grocery store. That's going to be hard on some of those systems. But as far as a road trip vehicle goes, I think you'd be hard pressed to find an SUV that's objectively better and still within that price window than a 3-liter Duramax powered one of these Yukons. That's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, because you said you have 80,000 miles on a something that's 3 years old or four years old.
So it sounds like you're doing some longer drives.
Right.
So that's
nice. Yes. It truly is the family truckster. It's been all over the country. Yes.
So anyways, so I would say this, Chris, since we don't have all the official news on the upcoming Yukon 2025 version, I'm betting, and I don't have this knowledge yet. GMC hasn't called me about this yet, but I'm assuming we'll know more within the next couple months. So if you could hang on to your current Yukon and then see, you know, what happens in the next couple months, then you can either order the new one or maybe find a current one.
Yeah, maybe find a bit of a deal on one of the outgoing models. And again, likely it's not going to be anything too dramatic with the update, but at the same time, if you could get some extra features, a little bit more refinement, then might as well.
I agree with that. And it's sad because there are really good deals on the Wagoneers right now, as I'm sure all of y'all know. And is it also true that Cadillac, the Escalade, they dropped the diesel?
That's what they said, yes, which is I was surprised by. So that's why I'm saying let's wait a couple months to hear a little bit more about the new Yukon.
Yeah.
The Escalade had that engine, but now they're going all V8s all the time.
Which I guess suits an Escalade well. But still, I like that 3-liter Duramax a lot. The 6.2 that you have in yours, as you know, also an awesome motor. Sounds great. A lot of fun.
Yes.
I think it suits the Cadillac well, but I just like that 3-liter Duramax a lot.
But you're not going to get that rumble either from the Hurricane or the Duramax.
Yeah.
You know,
The Hurricane, it's very powerful. I enjoyed that part of it. But you're right. The rumble and the sound was very different. But that's not a deal breaker for me. It's more so about something that's reliable and gets okay gas mileage, you know, for such a large vehicle.
Yeah.
Yeah. But nothing will replace that 6.2 rumble. I mean,
that's true.
I'm sorry. I mean, yes. I guess you could play. You could play a little bit of a recording of it or something.
Yeah.
It's hard to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Okay. Well, this was very helpful, guys. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for listening. You said you've been listening to the show and watching the show for quite some time. So really appreciate it. Thank you for being a Patreon.
Yeah, we appreciate the support.
Supporter. And so stay tuned. We should have more news about this really soon.
Yeah, hopefully something maybe that's exciting enough to get people wanting to maybe get the new model. Who knows what they'll do. But if nothing else, maybe they'll have some deals on the outgoing.
Awesome. Great.
Yeah. Right on. Appreciate it, man.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So that question had to do with big SUVs, right? GMC Yukon versus Grand Wagoneer. So it was a slightly different topic. But the topic still had to do with efficiency, right? Chris does a lot of road trips. He really was interested in the fuel efficiency, going long distance. And at that point, it's really hard to beat a diesel engine, right?
I would agree.
So thank you once again for using patreon.com/TFLcar. And so let's move on. Competition, right? We already talked quite a bit about Hyundai, but where's General Motors? Where is Nissan, Toyota, and others? Where's Stellantis? What is going on with Stellantis on this?
Stellantis right now, I think out of all the automakers, is in really deep trouble. They came out recently and acknowledged the fact that they've had a very bad year so far. I mean, we're only halfway through it as far as they're concerned. And they acknowledged that they're not listening to what perhaps the customers and even the dealers really want. And there's a disconnect there. We've known this for a while. It's not just with Ram, it's with Jeep as well, I think. And then to a lesser extent, Dodge. And there's a serious problem with the fact that there's no product. Think about Chrysler, there's no product at all. I mean, there's just a minivan. They don't have enough vehicles that are competitive in order to really profit. And that's one of their huge problems. But going to Ram, we were going to stick on trucks here. Their transition to the Hurricane, I think, has been a little slow. And they really missed an opportunity, I think, to make that a crowning achievement. Because when they brought out the new engine, the new powertrain, they brought out a truck that was less interesting, I think, than many people thought it could be. We saw concepts that looked really cool. We saw a whole bunch of this stuff. And all of a sudden, they bring out a truck that is, frankly, kind of boring. And I'm only saying that in terms of compared to what it was before. Mm-hmm. I don't know. We wanted something more dramatic or something like that, and we didn't get it. The truck prices are astronomical. The Ram is asking way too much money for their vehicles. And then in addition to all that, as good as the Hurricane is, and it is quite good, I think, it may not be as competitive as many people thought it would be. And that may be the other problem.
Yeah, so I haven't told you this yet. I just drove a Hurricane-powered Ram 1500 from Detroit to Denver, which is 1,200 miles.
20 hours.
That's a lot of hours.
It is, dude. You're amazing.
Thank you. Well, it was part of a thing. So I agree. So Stellantis is in a bit of a trouble. And Tommy and I have done a couple of shows about this already. So I don't want to beat that over the head too much. So the Hurricane is a powerful name, right? I don't know. It should be a bit loud and kind of a little bit scary, right? And the Hurricane engine that they came out with, the 3-liter twin turbo straight six, is actually amazingly powerful, but very quiet and very smooth. So it's almost like the engine, which is actually quite really, really good, is not quite matching the name. You know what I'm saying? So the name of it is this kind of loud and in your face kind of an engine versus really, really powerful and smooth and quiet, almost luxury level engine that they have provided. And actually, I really was comfy on my road trip. It was quiet. It was, the truck rides beautifully. It's a bit pricey, like you said. I was in a tradesman work truck, crew cab, 4x4, with just a couple of options. So I had a towing package, I had a technology package in it. It was quite comfy, really great road trip vehicle. 57,000.
How much?
57,000. So that was the sticker price. So I think you probably could find a few discounts if you shopped around on that particular type of truck. But still, that sticker price is still quite high, very high.
I still think they're 10% above where they should be. And I think that they should, you know, take the loss in terms of their bigger profits for a while and be the value vehicle they should be. And yes, you know, take a year, take 2 years. And yes, you're not going to be making X amount. You're going to make a lower amount, but bring in more customers by offering better deals. It's just ridiculous. And they're wondering why they have so many trucks on lots right now. I'm sorry, but I'm sure that tradesman's a wonderful vehicle, but $57,000 for a working man's truck. I'm sorry. That's just, once again, everybody's just pushing those prices way too high.
Yeah, and also, so smaller pickups, right? They don't have any midsize in the U.S. They don't have any compact in the U.S.
No.
The Jeep Gladiator exists. We know this, of course.
Yeah.
But they're offering quite a few pickups, like even in Mexico. So if you go down south of the border, you have many little Ram trucklets running around, right?
Yeah, there's the 200, there's the 50, there's a whole bunch of other ones.
Yeah, there's like some of them they call 1,000, some of them are called 1,200, you know, Ram 1,200, for example. And I was recently at this event in Detroit with Ram, right? And mm-hmm. they did flash a few images on the screen, but there was a presentation. And they flashed a couple of images, and they said, well, Mexico is getting a couple of new trucks, you know, midsize and smaller.
Right.
And everybody was in the room were like, what about us? Hello. So they didn't actually say anything specifically about United States getting more small vehicles. But I think they need to hurry. They really need to hurry and get a little bit more choice, a little bit more product our way. Just send it our way.
Well, they've gone through a major shift in terms of who's running which department. There's a lot of people who have left Stellantis recently, and I think that might be, that may not help development times. I think that they're going to have to retool sometimes. Now, was it the Ram Charger? What was that little Ram that they were developing in South America that was testing here? I think it was...
Rampage.
Rampage, that's right. Yeah. And, you know, we heard a little bit about it. They even indicated that it could come here. They really did hint pretty heavily about it. And then nothing. Crickets. And
well, yeah, exactly.
That I thought that if you had a base version of that with, let's say, 1,400 pounds of payload that could tow about 2,000 pounds, you know, front-wheel drive base model that was competitive with the Maverick, whether or not it was a hybrid is debatable, doesn't matter. But the point was, if they were able to come into that price point and undercut Maverick, they would be the sales leader in that space. Because right now, obviously, having an inexpensive pickup truck that you can drive daily, especially in big cities like where I am, would be huge. And nothing. I mean, not even a hint about whether or not, obviously, you were at an event and they didn't even hint to the fact that they were bringing anything small to the States. And Ram's the only one to do that. Everybody else, even Nissan, they have at least a mid-sized truck to compete. But yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand. Now, here's the other part, by the way.
Yeah.
Kia has developed a mid-sized pickup truck, which is supposed to be pretty interesting. I mean, it's about to hit in Australia and other overseas markets. And if they bring that vehicle here somehow, then Hyundai Kia will have a small truck and a mid-sized truck. And if they do that and Ram doesn't, I don't even know, you know, what to say.
Yeah. I think for Kia, the Tasman, right?
Tasman, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. That might be a little bit challenging for them because I think, first of all, it has to be built in North America, right?
Right.
Either Mexico, Canada, or U.S., in order for them to really be able to sell it here because of, obviously, import
chicken tax.
Chicken tax. And the same thing goes for everybody else, right? Toyota, if they wanted the mini truck, they also needed to do something here in North America in order to do this. And by the way, the Toyota Stout, you know, first we heard some positive news, it's coming, then not coming. So Toyota is still quite unsure. Roman and Tommy saw that amazing little electric concept in Japan, right? That was designed in Southern California. It was designed in North America for our market. And then crickets again, you know, nothing right now.
In terms of the capacity for automakers to up and build something, and we should touch on this really super quick, building a vehicle in North America saves you a lot of money, but more importantly, you get certain tax-exempt status on certain things. You get huge rebates. You have American workers, and then a lot of the components that come to the vehicle are usually produced here as well. So it's a big win-win for the United States. If you try to bring in the vehicle from overseas, it's a pickup truck, you will be paying what, 25% extra, I believe it is, on tax.
Yeah.
And that's huge. And that makes you priced out of the competition, with the only exception is like luxury pickup trucks, like the Quartermaster from Grenadier.
Yeah.
That they're going to import, and they're willing to take the bullet on 25%. Now, if they build facilities in order for these trucks to be, you know, put into market, that's great all the way around. Now, here's the part that gets me. Both General Motors and Ram have facilities that are right now being idled, and those facilities could be retooled to build, oh, I don't know, a small pickup of some sort. I'm not saying it's that easy and they can snap their fingers and make it happen, but we're talking about General Motors, for crying out loud, one of the largest automakers in the world. They do have pretty deep pockets. And right now, because they're retracting and pulling back from their whole electrification thing, I think now would be a great opportunity for them to produce a small pickup, which, by the way, overseas and in South America, they build.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, it's not as easy as snapping your fingers, but you're right. Several facilities are being idled because the shift to electrification has been slowed down in some areas, where, you know, the new vehicles that they were thinking they were going to build, they're not building. And there's this weird period where, you know, they're waiting, should we do this or that? And, you know, which way should we go? Which is a tough place to be at, obviously, where you're kind of unsure, you know, and a lot of investment is at stake. But I'm kind of puzzled how Ford was able to introduce a vehicle in 2022, which was almost 3 years ago now, for the 2022 model year as a Maverick, and then sell huge quantities of this vehicle, being very successful with it, increasing capacity, selling more of them, and then almost have no answer other than Hyundai, really, from anybody else. That's really puzzling.
It strikes me as strange. And I thought that at first, maybe they would sit back a year and just see how it develops. And the only reason Ford hasn't sold more is because of capacity. They're selling everyone that they build. They have a waiting list a mile long. This is one of the most popular vehicles that's currently being produced, next to the Ford F-150 and perhaps some Toyota products like the RAV4. But the Ford Maverick, in terms of overall popularity, in terms of them building as many as they can possibly build, is remarkably positive for Ford. So, yeah, why won't the competition build something that directly competes with the Maverick and, more importantly, helps their sales? I don't get it.
Yeah, exactly. So do you think this new Maverick will be more or less popular? Do you think it still has what it takes to really take it?
The all-wheel drive system that they put inside the hybrid, in addition to the fact that the hybrid now tows a lot more and is frankly more usable, I think will increase sales. I have a feeling that they're going to be pushing the capacity yet again. After a few months, you're going to have a really hard time ordering any Maverick. In addition to the fact that they now have like five or six different trims that you can get, if you're including the Lobo, that's a lot of different choice there that they have to actually go and build. And I think that they may need to open another facility or at least another line in order to keep up with orders. And this is my early prediction. I think that the Ford Maverick not only will surpass the Toyota Tacoma in terms of sales, I think it's going to rival Ram in the future for overall sales. I think you're going to start seeing 200,000 to 250,000 Mavericks move per year if they can keep up this momentum and keep things fresh and keep things affordable.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, this will be really interesting how the next year turns out, or, you know, half a year to a year and a half.
Right.
By the way, the new refreshed Maverick, you could order now. I believe the 2025 Hyundai Santa Cruz, you could also order already. So you can order them. The Maverick 2025 model will be arriving, they said, by the end of this year. So November, December-ish timeframe. The Lobo a little bit later. So if you're interested in the Lobo, that's going to be like early 2025. So that won't come immediately. And then, yeah, we'll see where that goes from there.
I'm excited to see what Ford does, and I'm desperate for other automakers to rise to the challenge. I'm sure many of you guys out there agree.
Exactly. Well, Nathan, I love this. I think our audience, you know, we haven't done a couple shows together since you were moving. So I love this. Thank you for obviously being here. And I think we need to hit a lot more of these in the future.
Absolutely. And there'll be some changes to my fuzzy background. Eventually, there'll be a studio and a whole thing. I finally got a home, guys. Woohoo! So we are definitely starting the California branch of TFL. And you're going to see a lot more from down here very soon.
Yeah, awesome. And you have access to, you know, many vehicles there. You have access to different fuels. You have hydrogen station next to you.
Right down the street. It's crazy. I was driving and just like a mile away, there's a Shell hydrogen station. Now, understand the reason I'm freaking out, because in Colorado right now, there's one hydrogen station that we're not allowed to have access to. And everybody's talking hydrogen this and hydrogen that, and yet there was nothing. I know they're building some in Colorado, but it's still not there. So here, you know, you'd think this is California, Southern California. And I was, you know, so happy to be here and pay so much money for gas. So hydrogen is definitely something that could be the fuel of the future for some people, right? But there are no stations. Well, I take that back. I'm driving down the street. There's a Shell station right there that's pumping just like a gas station. Yeah. It's really cool. So anyway, yeah, I kind of freaked out and geeked out about that just because of the lack of them.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you have a lot more public chargers there. So
oh yeah,
you have a lot going on. So maybe what I would like to do is maybe we can set something up where I can come out and see you over there. And maybe we can gather, you know, two or three trucks together and do some comparisons. You know, we can do
that. Some stuff would be awesome, but you got to bring your wetsuit, my friend. The beach is only 20 minutes that way.
Oh, now I'm remembering our trip in the Ford Expedition where we had to surf.
Yeah, well, actually, you had to surf. I watched.
Okay. All righty. All right. Thanks, dude.
My pleasure.
I will see you next time.
Okay. Adios, guys. We'll see you next time.
Thanks.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.